Reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 11. Text 11 is a very important verse in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. For those of you that are familiar with the preface of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada wrote this preface at the beginning of the first canto, and it appears at the beginning of each of the cantos subsequently printed, and this morning's verse is found in that preface because of its importance. In the preface, Prabhupada is establishing why he's writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. He writes in the preface, "We must know the present need of human society." And what is that need? Human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. The ideals of spiritual communism, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, the entire energy of living beings. The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill the need in human society, this need in human society. And then on. Why the Srimad Bhagavatam is being presented. There's need to bring about to address the imbalance of values, is Lord Prabhupada's languages, ways of expression. We're progressive, but we're losing quality in society, losing character in society. Therefore, there are large-scale quarrels, even over less important issues. There's need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause, and so on. So, he's invoking this verse as to what inspired him to translate Srimad Bhagavatam. And this verse is Narada's instructions to Vyas to compose Srimad Bhagavatam. Specifically, the verses we discussed yesterday morning had to do with the other types of literature, that which does not describe the glories of the Lord, but instead, in the absence of the glories of the Lord, will simply be directed towards sense gratification. And the whole of Kali Yuga, the degradation of Kali Yuga, is, in Bhagavatam language, too much affinity for matter. And in that too much affinity for matter, even the portions of the Vedas that give methods for those who are desiring material happiness to do so in a pious way, it still keeps them bound to too much affinity for matter, and in course of time just deteriorates once again. So something that's free from that, or relieves one from that, and specifically then it's taking all the branches of knowledge within the Vedas or within the world, because knowledge within the world ultimately comes from the Vedas, how all of those things within civilization or society can be directed towards glorification of the Supreme, establishing the glories of the Supreme, for that purpose mentioned in the preface. So the Sanskrit is very nice. The translation is very nice, and the purport is 3 pages long. tadvagna sargo janata agha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abhadyavat svapi namam yanantasha yashon kataniya shrinvanti gayanti grananti sadavaha. On the other hand, meaning in contrast to literature that's described as a pilgrimage place for crows, on the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes, etc. of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed toward bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Janata Agha Viplava. You all know what Janata means. The Janata Party. So Janata Agha, the sins of the Janatas, not just that party, but people in general. Janata Agha Viplava. Viplava means revolution or transformation, but like a startling transformation. So that the Bhagavatam is meant to bring about a revolution, Viplava, in the Aghas of the Janatas and make them free from that disturbance. By directing their attention to the Supreme. Then it says, such transcendental literatures, although imperfectly composed, that's yasmin prati shlokam abhadyavat sapi. Abhadyavati means there may be irregulations, some discrepancies, some it's not the message of Narada here is to Vyas, the beauty of the Bhagavatam or the value of the Bhagavatam, because it's called Srimad Bhagavatam, so the beauty of the Bhagavatam is not simply in the literary proficiency of it, the alankar, the ornaments of alliteration and metaphor and simile and poetic language, although it has, it's very beautiful in that regard also, but that's not what its beauty is. Its beauty is Shrinvanti Gayanti Krinanti Sadavaha, its direct glorifications of the Supreme Personality Godhead, which as a result are heard, sung, accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. I'll begin the purport and we'll stop. There are a few places where Prabhupada has put in italics messages. Might take a while to read the whole thing, so I don't know. Here's how he starts. The language is beautiful. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best even from the worst. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stock of poison, should accept gold even from a filthy place, should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family, and should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people become sane in their transactions. what we're getting here is Srila Prabhupada's heart and what drove him to endure all the hardships and austerities and literally risking his life at such an age to travel around the world 11 times and go in cold climates and, you know, communist countries and very risk taking. What drove Srila Prabhupada was this, what he's revealing here, a concern about the world. Not just concern about his family or his friends or his community. Prabhupada was, he's describing, on the queue of Narada, here's the remedy for the suffering condition of humanity. So Prabhupada is describing in his, from, it's likewise autobiographical, it's how hearing that message affected him. And so he writes, while preparing this commentary on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend China has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they were both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted, and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. Of course, there was a little bit political diplomacy here and there, but there is no cause for quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land, which is not very suitable for habitation. And certainly there's no cause for fighting on this issue, but due to this age of quarrel, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is due not to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Systematically, there is propagation by a section of people to, in italics, stop the glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. So that's separated by a colon. That is, what's the polluted atmosphere of the age? It's like, you know, equals the consequence of the absence, or at least the paucity of glorification of the Supreme Lord systematically. Like Prabhupada would sometimes describe, even in his youth, whenever there was some public function, there would always be some recitation of Ramayana or Mahabharata or something in glorification of the Supreme Lord, any public function. And today it's not the same. It's a Bollywood star or a cricket player or something. And then it's a political person that makes their speech about something. So the times have changed, and what Prabhupada is saying is it's deliberate. In italics, systematically there is propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, there is great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. Then he invokes some instruction of Lord Chaitanya here. It is the responsibility, it is the duty of every responsible Indian. I see some responsible Indians. It is the duty of every, not somebody will do it and I'll watch them and say that's you did a good job. It's the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world, to do the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world, because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work. There is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart. And naturally the people in general will follow them. The mass of people are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, it's like four times he's pointed out strategy, or, you know, he wanted the people in general should hear, but he also wanted that the shakers and movers in society would hear in a systematic way. And he entrusted the execution of that to y'all, responsible . We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature conveying transcendental messages for reviving the God consciousness of the people in general and re-spiritualizing the world atmosphere is fraught with many difficulties. One of those difficulties he's pointing out is English is not his original language. He's certainly doing very nicely with the English language, but there may be some flaws. And when scholarly people see some flaws, that's what they see. They see the fly. The spot on the white sheet. Oh, look at that spot on the white sheet. So, within the verse itself, it specifically says, even there may be some abhadavati, or irregularities in the composition, still the power, the potency is there because of the glorification of the Lord. He gives the example of fire. If a house is on fire, somebody comes running out of the house and they don't even speak the same language. If the house is on fire, you get the message, help! Even if it's not properly composed. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by people of the world, there will be success. Then the next paragraph, he points to the opposition, or the obstacles, the problems standing in the way. Too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world. And so, as a result, people are entrenched in fighting and attacking and defending and maneuvering and controlling. And that is the rule of the age of Kali, or quarrel. The atmosphere is already polluted with corruption of all description, and everyone knows it well. There are so many unwanted literatures full of materialistic ideas of sense gratification, and everybody knows it well. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censure obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want such literature. Yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read. That is a natural instinct. But because their minds are polluted, they want such literatures. Under the circumstances, transcendental literature like Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt mind of the people in general, but also it will supply food for their hankering after reading some interesting literature. In the beginning, they may not like it because one suffering from jaundice is reluctant to take sugar candy, but we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jaundice. Similarly, let there be a systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jaundice-like condition of sense gratification. When men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures which are catering poison to society will then automatically cease. So, Prabhupada's giving his rationale or justification for what many of the people of the world expect Hinduism to not do, to not be missionary in spirit, kind of just like passively coexist with other peoples of different views and people that consider themselves Hindu kind of pride themselves in that. We are, you know, we're very accommodating. We don't judge other people. That's very nice. I'm nice, you're nice. I'm okay, you're okay. Yatumat tatopat. And they are surprised sometimes. The surprise is marked. Why this organization is so actively pressing forward its message. So we're getting Prabhupada's reason why the Hare Krishna movement is doing like that. It's understanding the necessity. The house is on fire. The age of Kali is running rampant. Those of you, I mean, you're all from India. So when you've gone back to India and you see the changes that are happening in India, what do you think? It's shocking. 2 years ago, during our DBC meeting, one of our DBC members, I'll leave his name unspoken, but you might be able to figure out who it is, received a call from Delhi right in the midst of the meeting saying, you know, it was a government officer, central government officer, wishing our meeting well. He said that you are the only organization that is actively preserving our culture. He said that in the next 20 years, if it goes unchecked, the spreading of Islam and Christianity will completely change the face of India as we know it today, and the rampant materialism that's spreading. The face of India will not be the same. May you have a successful meeting. That was a nice call. And it's not just, you know, it's not a matter of checking the growth of a particular religion or something like that. It's that the actual values of society I mean, when I saw in the Delhi airport a McDonald's, right in the airport, and I didn't see it, but I heard in Mathura there's a McDonald's.
Hmm.
Wow. And without any care, people just, you know, lining up in front of the McDonald's place at the airport. And they might just be buying milkshakes and sodas, but they're probably not just buying milkshakes and sodas. I wasn't checking it out. Et cetera, so many things. Too much affinity for matter. And conversely, not just completely losing sight of the progressive values of life. What is this human life intended for? What's the design? Like everything that's manufactured, there's a purpose for it. And is an iPod designed to crack walnut shells and get the walnut inside? That's not what the design of an iPod is. You can use it, perhaps, for that purpose. But that's not its intended purpose. It will destroy the iPod. And this human form of life has... there's a design. There's an intent. And it's self-realization. And take away self-realization, which implies, because this phrase was used, Atmavan. So if self-realization is absent, and God, that means God-realization is absent, the glorification of God is absent, it's that space is going to be filled with something else. And the something else is, guess what? It's sense gratification of different labels and varieties, a whole array. And then in turn, what's the purpose of other people? What's the purpose of the resources of nature? Purpose of the resources of nature is to be exploited by us. And then who's going to get to exploit it? Just downloaded my mail, and the top headline in the New York Times is, China is going to beat America to the resources of South America. We didn't use that exact language, but you know, the Bush administration blew it. Now China's getting in, giving loans to South America. It's the same program that America did. Now China's following it. You give money to the people, and you get the resources back. You get the exclusive, so they can build their economy, and the other economies are weakening. And but you know, what about poor Mother Earth while they're fighting over the resources and doing their political gains? It's a hellish condition. It's hell on earth, and who's going to get to hell first? Why? And what to do? This is the why and what to do. And who's going to do it? People that hear the message, take the message. It's not a sectarian appeal. You know, give up that ism and take this ism. That's not the appeal. It's the glorification of the personality of God. It's for the name is specifically propagating Srimad Bhagavatam because it's such a potent literature. But take the glorification of the personality of God, and not this ism over that ism, but the glorification of the personality of God, as opposed to sense gratification. And Ishwaro Hum Aham Bhogi, becoming the controller and proprietor of many things and fighting with one another. Nation to nation, man to man, family member to family member, and just, it's just everything becomes, everything that's natural becomes disturbed and lost. That's the concern. It's what, going back to the beginning of the fourth chapter, it's what Vyasa saw, because he's a seer. He had, he's trikalagya, he could see. And he, when he saw it, was, I have to do something. So we're also, we're not Vyasadevs, but we can certainly see what's going on. And more of the same means it escalates. It doesn't change. It gets more severe. What, and so what to do? Propagate. Then on the other side, well, there's resistance. So then Prabhupada is saying, well, take the medicine. Because your jaundiced condition makes the medicine taste bitter, but it's actually very sweet. The nature of rock candy is it's sweet. It's not bitter. The condition makes rock candy seem bitter. And consequently, when men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures, which are catering poison to society, will then automatically cease. Last paragraph, two sentences. We are sure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter. End of purport. What Vyas, what any religion, even modern religion, sees is there's a condition of sin within society, agha, or vikarma. Abundant activities that are directly against the codes of Dharma, and it's abundant. And there's consequences. So, what to do? And the answer to that what to do question makes up what the religion is. So, vastly, quickly spreading religion in the world is Christianity, but you know, that says, what do you do about sin? You just accept Christ and it's okay. And repent, feel for your sins, feel bad that you've done sins, but don't fret, don't worry about it, because Christ died for your sins. Your salvation is within that acceptance of Christ. And this, but the sense of where virtue lies, as opposed to vice or sin, it's where is it? If it's, you know, nicely you could say it's blurred, but more from the Vedic standard, it's more sin. It's abundant sense gratification that doesn't lead to spiritual elevation. It leads to further degradation. It's not that the religion is, that the teachings are erroneous, it's just the application of those teachings of that quality. There are two circumstances in public lectures where Prabhupada spoke about the first time he met, not to pick on Christians, but the first time he met someone who was said that they were Christian. Even before, Prabhupada said, I never met them before, and immediately said, you are not. And they said, well, how can you say I'm not? I am. And Prabhupada said, do you accept, two questions, do you accept if being Christian means to follow the teachings of Christ? Well, of course. The second question is, are you killing? The teaching is thou shalt not kill, correct? Yes. Are you killing? Well, no, I'm not killing. Are you eating meat? Yes, I'm eating meat. Then you're killing. So you're not Christian, because Christian means to follow the teachings of Christ. But we can apply it to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita also. To be a follower of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, we need to apply the teachings of Bhagavad Gita in our life. And therefore one needs a clear and proper understanding of what those teachings are, and for that you need a teacher to know clearly what the teachings are. And the following, the practical application, once we know what the teachings are, in fact, has its challenge. Like, control the mind. It has its challenge. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, bring the mind back. Okay, that's a nice instruction. Now do it. And it's difficult. But that's the instruction. And so on. To systematically propagate the message, the propagator should also be a proper follower of that message. At least be striving to become a proper follower of that message. Otherwise, it's more of the same. It's more hypocrisy. Say this, do that. And who appreciates hypocrisy? Nor does it have the same potency as that which is genuine, representing the real thing. So that challenge is there also. But the very means of, in addition to striving to actually follow, to strive to make this message of the Bhagavatam known within the world, accessible to people in general, that's purifying also. Because as one is going through the exercise of making it available, it helps one reflect upon how I need to be an example as the one who's presenting this message. What I mean here is, it's not that, okay, after I become a perfected, liberated soul, then I can take this message up, this mission up. Both should be there. Taking the message within myself, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Sadhavaha, but it also the Viplava program, the systematic propagation program, intended to bring about a change in the impious lives of people in general. The mood, at least in this part of the world, I know less about other parts of the world than this part of the world, but this part of the world, what was the slogan that got the president elected? Change. We'll bring about change in the White House. Yeah, change, because we want change. And studies show, we were discussing this past weekend, what is the young people or progressive people in society today, young educated people, what do they want? They want to apply themselves in some manner that brings change, brings value where there's a paucity of values. They want to join the Peace Corps or apply themselves in what's going to make the production or the economy, some part of the economy, green, and get, you know, the carbon footprint, and, you know, do something to make it different, make a difference in society. They don't want to just their decisions of careers are not just how much money am I going to make, okay, I'll do that. They'll take all kinds of inconveniences to do something that they really resonate with, that's going to make value in society. That's our modern American audience, at least young American audience. Our something that we can add to that, let's make a change, is you're not going to make a change as long as the sinful nature of people is rampant. And how are you going to change that? That change is described within the Bhagavatam. The hearts of people have to change. And here's the formula. At least as it's described within Srimad Bhagavatam, here's the Bhagavatam's formula. Take that. The upcoming verses are going to address this branch of knowledge, that field of activity, whatever it is. Take that up in this same spirit. Like Prabhupada is saying, it's the technique, not the language. What's the technique? Put God at the center. Glorification of the Supreme Personality and God at the center. Somehow do that. Then you bring about the change you want. Otherwise, two steps forward and three steps back, because consciousness hasn't changed. It's trying to adjust things by moving the shadow instead of moving the object that's casting the shadow. What's the problem? The problem isn't just how the shadow looks. The problem is what the hearts of people are. That needs to change. And then the behaviors will change. The quality of life will change. And Prabhupada gave prominence to that particular verse, so I thought it would be appropriate to do the same. Any discussion? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, I see that there is a growing movement, increasingly popular section of people driven primarily by materialistic science and atheism, running by the slogan truth, compassion and reason, and at the same time they don't want to commit to any isms, even atheism. Their philosophy is we are truly transcendental because and non-sectarian, because all we want is truth, whatever is reasonable we'll accept, which is supported by science, and then we'll be compassionate to the humanity. And one example,
and that's their
example,
religion. And that's their religion.
Yeah. One example, when I was speaking to one of my cousins who was very much into this kind of movement, he was saying how they accept Vedic rituals and say the chanting of the mantras and all the meditation, Buddhist meditation, all that, because you can scientifically prove that they affect your brain and it's beneficial to humanity and all. So as long as it's within that paradigm, we have no problems, accepting all these religious practices and so on. So they're not here, they're not there. It's very difficult to even grasp them in your hand and, deal with them. I was wondering if you could kindly share how it seems how we may deal with them seems like this is going to be a very, very challenging group of people.
It's not new. It's all this time. It's the, you know, if the agnostic or the atheistic moralist. Agnosticism is atheism. So, the atheistic moralist. You know, the karma mimamsa. Whether there's God or not, worship God, it's okay. Whether there's God or not, it doesn't really matter. Just truth, reason, and compassion. You know, they do good work. So, there are different responses. One response is, on what standard are we going to decide what's truth? And what, you know, the idea of reason, you know, one person reasons and another person reasons better and dismisses that reason and establishes, you know, where's the end? How is one to determine standards of what's good or what's right, what's truth? Because, you know, in one period of time, so many examples, but, you know, something is wrong and now today is right. Something was just couldn't even be considered sometime in the past. It's now standard. And it just keeps moving and keeps moving. So how to establish a standard? Your mind is the standard. Your mind says it's reasonable and therefore that's the standard. But minds change. And groups of minds change. So what's the standard? The Vedas say dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So it's on the basis of Bhagavan says, not your group think. I don't trust your mind. I don't trust my mind. I don't trust group minds. That's not how standard becomes established. Where do those Vedic mantras come from? Where does the ability of science to where does everything come from? Answer that question for me through truth, reason, and compassion. That's your religion. Without God.
One of the points they make is, you know, change is part of our system. We don't say that we'll accept certain standards or truth, absolute truth, that, you know, for all times it will keep evolving and we are completely fine with it. As long as it's, you know, within this realm of reason and proven by, accepted by science. So it's very, very, and like when I challenge, you know, why should I follow?
I don't see that's airtight at all. Not at all. Science, you know, silly. Science is a bluff. A big part of science is the bluff. Some of the fundamental underpinnings of science is a bluff. Because a bunch of big guys, you know, like when you're a kid growing up, the bullies are over there because they're a bunch of bullies and they're shoulder to shoulder. You know, they've got the truth because they're bullies. Well, I'm sorry. I don't accept because they're bullies they got the truth. Where does life come from? There's one. Where does truth come from? There's another. I'm sorry. Bullies, if you get out of here. I'm not gonna be ruled by you. Right. And then they do the same program. Well, you know, look what science has done for you. How can you say that? And I'll say, look what science has done to, what technology has done to us. What has technology done to the quality of life? Oh, but you're using so much of technology. How can you speak like that?
Mm.
I'd be happy to do without it. Something else? I mean, it's practically an unending bottomless pit to go into that. But you know, yes.
Guru Maharaj, oftentimes when we go through the situations when there are misunderstandings with other devotees, and when we, what we are encouraged to do by this training, when we have that open communication, we see that it's because of the language or the way we express things. Like when other devotees say, this is what I understood, and we say, this is not what I meant, this is what I meant. So, as per this verse, how do we understand properly the importance of language and expression? I was also hearing the recent lectures that you have given in Chicago on cultural expression, the importance of refined speech. Because I very much struggle with the way the expressions come out, be it with the devotees or be it with my superiors. It's a lot of time to. So how do I improve it?
Prabhupada certainly placed value in language. He had editors for that reason. Although he's the acharya, he had his disciples editing his work because he wanted the language to be a clear expression of the intent. It's not that language is unimportant, but even if there's discrepancy in language, the appeal is, please understand the intent. Like in a relationship, like you're describing, as far as I could follow what you just said. Certainly there communication, miscommunication, and based upon miscommunication, then, you know, some feelings, that's just miscommunication. It's missing the intent. So more important is, you know, trust in the person who is trustworthy, and if their language says something else, you can work it out because there's trust in the relationship and trust in the person. So that's kind of what Prabhupada is appealing here, that, you know, trust the words of Vyasa, even there may be discrepancy, and please trust my words, because the purpose is so then you can refine the language. And it's important to have proper words to express what you mean. And even with some practice and some proficiency, still there can be misunderstanding. And in the age of quarrel, over nothing, there's misunderstanding. Doesn't mean this doesn't say don't worry about what you say. It's that although there may be some discrepancies in the technical manner of expression, more important is the glorification of the Lord. Is that right? When issues arise between persons, especially persons that you care very deeply about, place the relationship up here in the priority position. Be committed to the relationship, and on that basis you can work things out. Conversely, if the commitment to the relationship is not there, you're not, if, you know, even if you try to work things out, it just gets lost in an endless minutia of misunderstandings. And then people hold on to those misunderstandings, and that becomes the relationship or the perception of the relationship. Something else?
Guru Maharaj, can you please elaborate on thoroughly honest, that sadhava?
It's just a couple things quickly, because there are verses that go into it very deeply. What's the word? Without deception. Yeah. Where you're self-honest. You're there's no deception. Who you are and what you present to the world, there's no difference. No deception of others, nor self-deception. That is, or another way of saying the same thing is, you want to become established in a relationship with the Absolute Truth. And although I may not be there, I'm striving for that. So, although I may not be there means there are other things that are attracting my attention besides the Absolute Truth. And the honest expression is that there are other things that are distracting my attention, but I wish to reach that goal. So those that are committed to awakening their God consciousness, that's the sadhavaha. They're attached to sat, or striving to become.
Like in India, like here in this paper, it was said that the reading, people like to read literature, but there are like a family, the whole setup is like TV in the center, and their memes and everything. That is, even reading has become less, and that's the media where they take all the information. And how is this hardly any Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness shared on the TV? So, what is the way to even they're so habituated that to even realize that there's some spirituality existing besides just changing channels or various speakers that seems to be.
Well, even TV watchers read all kinds of things. When I, as I travel, I see people are reading all types of things. There's lots of people reading books. You know, these are, you know, media influenced people. They're still reading all types of things. So, through association with persons that are TV addicted, or, you know, it's a core part of their culture, has become. It's not just in the family, it's in the world. The challenge is the same thing. By example, by personal association by example, people can start to see there's another value besides that one. And they can be reminded by example and by precept, but most important, by example. And then those things which are just because the brain has become dull, make the brain sharp again. By association. Yep. Do you need elaboration?
No.
Just to amplify what you said, there are a number of circumstances that I'm aware of where parents came to visit their children, now married, living in America, from India, and they had to have a television because that's become their life, is television. And then the parents said, well, we don't want our child exposed to television. Well, we can't live without television. That's our life. You know, why don't you send us back to India? Because, you know, look, we can't go out and go anywhere because we don't drive, and that your culture is you got to drive somewhere, and we're sitting at home, we can't have television. Well, here's our Bhagavatam set, and you know we have all these videos about Krishna, and you can do that. No, it's got to be television. And so it's a conflict, but in course of time, through seeing how a devotee leads their life, it can, you know, wean them off television and onto life of devotion. It's, you know, it's the modes of nature and the values that have become established through, you know, just dull-headedness. But once again, even media influenced people, they read stuff, lots of stuff, newspapers and magazines, but also books. They read lots of stuff. I see it all the time. Yes.
The second part of the question is like some, you know, young students who are really sincere seekers. They are trying out various things and going to different study groups and all.
Yeah.
And it is a reality that they can shift to any part of the U.S. anytime, and you know that connection may be lost very easily when they pass out of the college or like the university.
That happens.
So what is that one principle that we can share with them where they can probably be not cheated if they evaluate something against that principle?
Well, yeah. It's often not information, but it's relationship. And that there's actual quality, and they find in you as an individual, a person that's an individual of quality, and they can trust. And then a second thing is experience. Like, you know, they experience something when they chant. They experience something different when they take prasadam instead of other things. Not just like it tastes good, but they experience a shift in their life, how they experience life. Because otherwise it's just a world of ideas. Your idea, another's idea. Yeah, I want to check out some ideas. And so hovering, and like the, you know, the cloud floating in the sky. How do I get that cloud that's floating in the sky to like stay in place? It won't. The world of ideas is ever changing, not only where they are, in the United States, but you know, their ideas are ever changing. Anything over here? Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Jai.